You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. All right, here we are. But before we begin, my good friend, hi. Dr. Sumi, hi. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for being here with me.
I'm so glad we are having this conversation today. Thanks for making a space for it.
Yeah, and thanks for the invitation. Reach out to me to be like, can we do this? Because I think it's really important, and I'm glad we are. But before we begin, I want to pause real quick and just say this to the listener. Like, if you're listening right now, I feel like I know something about you, maybe. And it's that you're busy. It's that you're probably listening to this while you're folding the laundry. You're on your way to pick up your kids. They're finally asleep and you're finally getting that space and you're tuning in and you're, you know, you don't have a lot of extra time or energy, but you're here. You're utilizing some margin in your day to be here. And I think that means that you care. And it means that you're trying to show up thoughtfully for your kids in a moment that feels confusing, it feels heavy, it feels overwhelming. And so I think it's really important that you're here. It really matters. And just to name that, because I know it can feel sometimes like, am I doing anything here that matters? And this matters. And so my hope with like setting the expectation for our conversation today is that it's meant to be a place of containment, not more flooding, you know? And also, you don't need to necessarily agree with everything that we say for this to be worth your time, actually, I think, you know? Like, even if some parts don't land for folks, I'm just genuinely glad that you're here. And maybe you're listening because you're trying to figure out how to hold truth, fear, anger, care all at once without collapsing or shutting down because you have kids. And I think that, you know, actually, if you're not here, if you don't agree with everything we say, I'm actually still really glad you're here, because could you imagine if we were all able to stay in conversation with each other and like listen and hear different perspectives instead of living in our own little echo chambers, which I know is tricky to do in this day and age, especially in the era of social media. And so I'm just glad that we can remain in the room together, even if we don't fully agree. And just to also name the truth of that, we're living in a moment that's deeply unsettling for many. Many parents are absorbing devastating news, images, and they're not just like something we see. Like, we have like physiological responses to them. They live in our bodies. And then we're expected to pivot into normal life, like making dinners, asking, you know, answering questions. Like, and over the weekend, Sumi, I had a moment. I'm human. I was in the rabbit hole. My whole body was like this. And my five-year-old came up to me and she was like, Mom. And then she little elbow, like got, like kneed me, like, you know, or like not kneed me, like dug into my chest. And I was like, get off of me. Like, and I just like, I needed, and I snapped, right? And so, you know, we're expected to like, and like, we're expected to pivot into normal life and doing all these things, tucking our kids in, and then while feeling super triggered, overwhelmed, emotionally fried. And I just want to say this clearly, you know, from the outset, that's not a personal failure. And that's something I know that you talk a lot about. It's a nervous system responding to real threat and like moral injury, you know? So we can't cover everything today. There are so many layers, too many lived realities, especially for families who are already vulnerable. But what we hope to help you with today is understanding some of what might be happening inside of you, how we can regulate ourselves without disengaging or burning out, and offering language for how we could talk to our kids across different age spans in a way that protects them without pretending like nothing is happening. So I'm so happy to be here with you. Can I give you like a little intro just, and then
please
you can
do.
If I fill in the gaps. So Dr. Sumi is a cross-cultural clinical psychologist, former psychology professor who works with adults navigating trauma, burnout, chronic stress, especially in moments like this where the personal and political collide. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. That was a great introduction.
Yeah. And I want to add that I think you bring, though, a really grounded, humane, and community sort of centered lens to this work. And
thanks.
I'm so grateful for your presence here.
Me too.
You're the best.
So glad you are too. I know we're going to touch upon this in portion of our conversation today, but like, just like when I logged on and saw you, I was like, my friend, you know, like that moment of like, what are the things that cut through the darkness? Mm. In times like this are like real conversations you can have with people who care and see what you see. So this is not just about offering support to others, but like this is supportive to me and I think to you too.
Yeah. This is for us too, 100%.
Yeah. It
felt like it gave me some sense of agency over the weekend to be like, okay, let me write out some notes for this conversation.
Yes.
Like, what can I... And that felt like something that I have agency around. And I think we'll talk more about the role of all that in this. But before we get to the sort of psychological experience, parenting experience of this moment, I want to ground our listeners in what's actually happening on the ground right now. And because the context really matters. Why has this become such a traumatic and frightening moment for families? And I would love to... give you that chance to kind of really name these things for us here.
Sure. I mean, I think if you've been following the news and paying attention, you know what's happening, which is that ICE is brutalizing and terrorizing the people of Minnesota. It's happening in other parts of the United States too. I think a lot about like, how do we show up now as psychologists, as mental health professionals, and as parents? You know, we are grieving and we are alarmed, and we cannot erase the haunting images of like the stuffies in Renee Good's glove box, or like or her voice being like, I'm not mad at you, dude, right? Or little Liam Ramos in his Spider-Man hat. And most recently, the brutal murder of Alex Preddy, who lawfully was videotaping and trying to protect another citizen and was shot 10 times by ICE. And this is happening, and we are seeing it, and you know what your eyes see and what your ears hear and what you feel in your body. And this is happening while we're also listening to the president, the vice president, the speaker of the House, the director of Homeland Security, people who are supposed to be responsible for some degree of safety and upholding of law, actually lie to our faces and gaslight us repeatedly, describing innocent victims of state terror as domestic terrorists. We're hoping today, I think, to give you some sense of, you know, what are your reactions? Where are they coming from? How do you manage them? And then maybe give you some talking points on how do we keep going in this dystopian version of reality? I did a lot of my master's and dissertation research working with survivors of torture and political violence. And it really shaped my orientation clinically to understanding that like, sociopolitical and cultural events actually shape who we become, what we value, who we connect with. Like these things deeply impact us. Even if you are not reading the news a lot, even if you don't think of yourself as political, you are a product of the world that you're in to some degree, and you're impacted here. And I think a lot about the clients I worked with there and the things I learned from them. You know, there's so much, you said this earlier, there's so much we can't cover today and versions of this conversation that might be more than we can say right now, but we really need to start by saying that like what you see is true and real. ICE is terrorizing people.
Yeah.
There is state violence and the government is lying about it. If you are upset, it is because your nervous system is functioning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a bug. It's a feature of your nervous system.
That's right. It's supposed to do that. Yeah.
And as you were just talking and just naming the facts of things that obviously I've seen these images but as you were talking, I felt my chest tightened, my eyes welled up, my shoulders lifted. I think I like stopped breathing for just a moment there. that's a nervous system reaction, right?
Yeah.
And in order for me to be here in this conversation right now and to stay in it, right, to orient myself back to the present moment of what I'm trying to do here, there were some things that I had to notice and some things I had to do to, like, come back in just like, yeah, right here, right now, you know?
Yeah.
So
right.
I'm curious, let's to kind of start us off here, right? So when parents are exposed to this kind of violence and injustice, what's happening in the nervous system?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it, like, impossible to be unaffected by this and, like, to still function as if nothing is happening?
Right. I mean, and permission for all of you that you do not have to keep functioning as if nothing is happening. But to your very important point, there might be some extra things you need to do right now to stay regulated. I want to give us just, like, a brief context, which is that we all have some basic nervous system wiring that's designed to keep us safe. We are wired to try to stay physically safe. We are wired actually to attach to each other, mm-hmm, to build connection. And mm-hmm, we are wired to make meaning of, mm-hmm, experience. These are basic human nervous system needs. So threats to those processes actually activate the nervous system fear response.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot learn about the state murdering innocent people and be unaffected. We cannot hear government officials lie to us and then make PBJs at the end of the world.
Ugh. Yeah.
Right? And this is especially true for BIPOC folks, myself included, who might be feeling extra vulnerable. And we know that state terror for many BIPOC, mm-hmm, folks in this country is not new, but, mm-hmm, it does feel like there is something specific at this moment. The problem is not that you're too sensitive or you're too angry, it's that you are reacting reasonably to terrifying, yeah, things.
Yeah.
When you see people get murdered on video,
yeah,
you feel unsafe. That is a nervous, yeah, system threat. When you see other human beings, particularly if there's an identity affiliation, a mother, a person who looks like you, person,
yeah,
like of your background, that is an attachment threat and a safety threat. And then when you watch the lying and the lack of accountability, that is a meaning threat. So this is going to create physiological reactions.
Yeah.
And those reactions, just like you described, right? Tightening of the chest, slowing of the breathing, tensing of the muscles. Those are built-in mechanisms that are supposed to keep you safe because they're preparing you for fight or flight.
Yeah. 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 And then we wonder why, you know, when my 5-year-old comes in and, like, you know, kind of like squeezes her elbow on my boob and I'm like, get off of me. You know, like, it's that rage response. It's that anger, right? It's, mm-hmm, that fight response. I'm already, my nervous system is already in a place of feeling threatened, reasonably so. And now, gosh, it's landing on the people around me, right? Because I'm in that threat state. I wanna pick up on something else that you shared here. In the recent present, two of the people that have been killed were, you know, as you named, a white mother, Renee Good, a white male veteran, Alex Preddy, also a vet works with vets as a nurse, a legal gun owner, right? And I think that for some people, right, for some white parents, I think this has cracked something open in them. There's this kind,
yeah,
of like shock that says, wait,
right,
this could happen to people like us. And that
That's
shock
right.
is real. It's disorienting
right.
when the illusion of safety breaks.
That's right.
And this is not... We should be so clear that this fear does not equal the lived right reality of Black, Indigenous people of color and immigrant families, right?
Yeah.
But it's sort of like this, but I also don't want to, you know, dismiss white parents' fear, but to help them kind of like,
yeah.
I think we got to help them like kind of locate it. Like this
yeah.
is, it's not the beginning of injustice, but
right.
and like an invitation for them
but
to come in and see.
The undeniability
what has,
of it.
Yeah.
The undeniability
yeah.
of it.
Right.
Right. And it goes back to the idea of like meaning is a core need. And so now we have a meaning threat, which is like, this could this could happen here. This could happen here to white U.S. citizens who were not breaking the law. The state is just going to kill them in cold blood. We are going to witness that murder and they're going to lie. Oh my gosh, like what a threat to meaning, right?
Yeah.
Like it's so overwhelming. And, you know, we're talking about this idea of like we're bearing witness to brutality. And that causes injury to us and it causes a nervous system reaction. And we're going to, I think, talk about this in more detail, but like, it's really, really important knowing that we are all a little bit more activated, that we practice different tools to de-escalate, regulate, and ground, because that's how we're going to get through this. Yeah. And these are lessons actually that BIPOC folks have learned. They're lessons that incredible people in Minnesota are teaching us every day. That the problem isn't activation. Activation is to be expected. Mm-hmm. But knowing this, knowing that we will be a little more ticked up and compromised, we actually have to employ different strategies to take care of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So that we can also activate something we have agency around, which is how we show up for our kids, you know, and be able to kind of use what we are able to learn for ourselves to model to them, to raise kids who don't look away when others have been living with this for so long, but also, right, to know how to care for themselves, regulate themselves so that they can have continuity of being able to show up, right? And a big piece of this is how do we bring safety back into our bodies, because it's a privilege to have safety, but if we can't access that safety within ourselves, then we're not going to be of any help to anyone else. And then also bringing that safety to our kids.
That's right. And, you know, I like that you like to say that like burnout happens when the care has no containment. We're seeking containment. We also know that attachment for kids, attachment is the foundation of emotion regulation. Mm-hmm. So when we connect with them, provide that safety, this is not about erasing worry or pretending things are fine. It is helping them feel that we are people they can trust, we are the adults, and we are taking steps to keep ourselves and each other safe. And it's also, I think, important for parents to hear that that doesn't mean you have to pretend that you're unaffected. Part of the process here is like labeling and naming feelings for yourself is sometimes really validating and powerful for them. So I'm wondering if at this point in our chat, like, should we talk more about how we contain and regulate ourselves as parents, or should we shift to talking about how we talk to our kids? What feels right now?
I think we first got to talk about how we regulate and ground ourselves, right? Yeah. Because I think that's actually in real time, kind of more of the natural, like what actually needs to happen is we have to do that first. And that might sometimes look like saying, I need a moment. I need a minute. Sumi and I are smiling at each other because I have a book coming out and that might be connected to the title. But no, for real,
we do need a moment.
Mom needs a minute. I was able to say that to my 5-year-old, you know, over the weekend when I snapped at her, and I took a breath, I took a beat, and like she knows now when I do this like shushing sound on my exhale, it's like, oh, like now enough times it's happened where it's like, oh, mom caught herself. And I told her, I said, I need, you know, I think mom needs a moment to like go, just I need to calm my body right now. There's like, just some stuff that's making mama feel like stressed. And that's not for you to, that's not yours. That's mine. And I'm going to go, I need a minute. Go hide out in the car, go for a walk. If you can tap out with another adult, like go in the bathroom, go in another room. And that's
scream
what I did.
Scream into the void.
Hey there, if you are a California, Nevada, or New York faced parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience, or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me. I will follow up with you and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you.
Right.
I turned off my phone. I had to. Like, I had to.
We do
turn
have
it
to.
Off.
Yeah.
And it was like this, like, I had to like rip its talons out of my,
like, literally like throw it away kind of thing.
Body.
Yeah.
And put it away.
I love
go.
That image. Yeah. Because it has it in its clutches.
Yes,
it's true.
Right? It really does.
Yeah.
So yeah, what else would you add to that there?
Yeah.
How we can ground ourselves.
I think getting really concrete, we cannot expect our nervous systems to transition from viewing brutality and violence to anything else, actually, without a minute. If you watch someone get murdered in your phone, put your phone down, take a breath. I'm not telling you not to watch, not to read.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happens with the constant scrolling and exposure is that it leads to a sense of helplessness, because the desire, the drive to attach, asks us to intervene when we see distress in others. And when we're unable to intervene, we feel helpless and stuck.
Yeah.
And we are accelerating that process when we doom scroll. We are all guilty of it. But one very concrete tool I want to give you is, when you look at something that hits you, just pause.
Yeah.
60 seconds might be enough to close your eyes, take into your body what that was, and ask yourself, like, do I need to keep scrolling, or do I like need to take a beat?
Yeah.
Right? Because we really want to combat that helplessness, because that helplessness is like the way to despair.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it takes, there's like a mindfulness muscle, right? That is something we have to actually like practice and learn
build.
How to flex, build, right? Where it's really kind of tuning in, like realizing like, oh my God, I'm a body. I'm a body that's like sending me signals all the time, right?
Yep.
Of data that's happening, of stuff that's happening around me. And so maybe it's like a sensation you get in your throat, a tightness in your chest, a pit in your stomach, right?
Yeah.
Like an eye twitch, like, you know, shoulders up here. And it's becoming more and more like aware of when that's showing up for you, and being and listening to it, and
that's
taking up a pause to be curious, okay, whoa, my body's having this reaction.
Yeah.
And where am I right now? Am I in a space to keep taking in more? And is that going to be productive right now?
Yep.
Is there something else that actually is going to be productive right now for me to keep showing up for the things I have control over, you know, my parenting, like my community? Like, do I actually need to stop for now? Right. And
that's right. Yep.
And rest, regulate. Right. I'm big on, I tend to have to shake it out, because it just like, it's like this, and I have to like actually like shake
Move
it out.
The body.
And so sometimes it's like putting on a certain song. If I can tap out, like if my husband's around, and just being like, I just need to like take a walk. I need to get out. I need to take a lap, right? Or like laying down, like I'll grab one of my pets and like put them on my chest, right?
Matcha.
Our cat Matcha. Her not so much will like just lay there unless like it's on her terms. It's more Ronnie, our dog. I'll be like this, and he'll come.
But she's such a fluff ball.
She is. I know. So when she'll give it to me, I'm like, What an honor. Yes. What an honor for her to grace me with her presence.
But that's, yeah, I mean, so, these are good suggestions, because I think I want to really be hopeful a little bit in this conversation, and remind people that, like, bodily reactions are signals from your nervous system. The mindfulness muscle that you're talking about, like, when you notice it, just, like, take the signal. And actually, what can be really helpful in those moments is, like, sensory grounding.
Yeah.
Using the senses, right? So that's where I say, like, I want to be hopeful, because I want to say that, like, part of our job is we want to get from a 10 to a 7 or from a 7 to a 5. If you think in yourself, I need to get to a 0 and be, like, zen calm, like, that's not a realistic expectation maybe right now. But there's a qualitative difference between 10 and 7, or between mm-hmm. 7 and 4, mm-hmm. in terms of what you can access. So mm-hmm. what we're trying to do is take the temperature down, take the level down. Sometimes what that is you notice the signals in the body, chest tightening, muscles crunching, and you, like, literally, like, touch something soft,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. you remind yourself that you're in the present. You yeah. stretch your muscles, you close your eyes and reduce visual input. You take 5 breaths. You go outside and smell, in my case, cold freezing air, and maybe you eat some snow.
yeah.
Which I definitely did this morning. Mm-hmm. I definitely went outside and ate some snow with my kids.
I love that.
And, like, those things, they can disrupt the cycle. They can bring you down from 10 to 7. And then, so those are sort of like the in the moment, break yeah. the spiral kind of things.
Yeah.
Right? Like, things you could do for your body, any kind of connection you can make to another human, your partner, your friend, like someone where you're just like, this thing is happening. And yeah. that person can just, like, be a human for you.
Yeah.
I think there's things longer term that we also need to do for ourselves. And one of the most underrated things in that area is, like, we need to continue to feel joy and recognize that it's not a betrayal of your commitment to these values to feel good sometimes.
Mm, yes.
Like, it's mm-hmm. actually how we keep showing up.
Yeah.
Like, you are not showing solidarity with the people of Minnesota by drowning yourself in darkness and despair.
Yeah.
Do things to keep yourself uplifted.
Yeah. Yeah, I have family in Minnesota, and was talking to them over the weekend, and my cousin, a mom herself, was telling me how one thing that they did over the weekend is they went to, like, a trampoline park, and she got out there and she was just like, she's like, Cassidy, I was just ridiculous, and we were just laughing and, like, being so goofy, and, like, you know, of course there's that moment where you're like, all of this brutality and violence and pain is happening, and we are literally floating on a rock in space. This, like, yeah. this is not what we were, however you make meaning of why we're here, like, this isn't it. Like, yeah. this isn't
no
it.
Way.
Like, what we're doing to each other here. But
no way.
We're, like, if we lose sight of that joy and that connection and just that, like, soul lifting, soul meaningful yeah. moments, like, then
joy is resistance and so is rest
because yeah
so is mm-hmm. rest, because part of the goal of state terror is to exhaust us emotionally so that we give up, right? So, like, the more we keep ourselves nurtured and nourished, actually, like, the more we are fighting back the refusal to be beat down, actually.
Yeah.
Is an act of resistance. And if I go back to those, like, core nervous system needs, safety, attachment, meaning, like, we build attachment through shared joy. We create meaning when we laugh, actually.
Mm.
Like, when we mm-hmm. do those things together, like, we are mm-hmm. refilling our cups that way. You got to keep doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please do. Like, please, if you do. Take if you take anything from this.
Oh my gosh, please tell us what you're doing for joy also. Like, let's let's, like, share that a little bit.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Very concretely also, you have to do some specific basic things. You have to sleep. You have to eat. You have to be careful about your news consumption, right? Maybe you schedule it. Maybe you give yourself social media breaks. you guys know this stuff. Everybody knows this stuff, right? But like, there's a value in reinforcing why it's connected to your maintaining your nervous system during this time of activation. Yeah. Like, it's not just like a good idea. It's like pretty essential.
Yep. Yep. 100%. Okay. Should we transition into...
Let's do it. Making PBJs at the end of the world?
Like, you're now you're regulated and grounded, and you're getting good, some little moments of joy.
Everybody's better now, right?
It's going to take practice. Yeah, it's going to take some practice. It's a muscle we have to tone. And I know that parents are also desperate for, like, okay, and my, like, it's still currently happening. Maybe my kids are getting exposed, or my kids are having questions, or how do I talk to my kids about it? So I think that, you know, the big picture first is grounding, regulating yourself first. You know, maybe there's a conversation starter of like, I want to talk about something that's happening in the news. You can ask questions, and my job is always to keep you safe. I feel like that's like, you can ask questions, and my job is always to keep you safe, right? It's like safety and the openness that like, this isn't the only time for this to come up.
Right. That applies, I think, not to cut you off, but that applies regardless of age.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can say that.
For sure.
And to think of this as like the beginning of conversations, you do not have to say everything in one conversation.
Yeah.
You're opening the door to be able to talk about these things.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I have kids across the age span-ish, right? Because we got some big age gaps there. So maybe we could talk about, start with the little ones, right?
Our little ones are the same age.
Our little ones are the same age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that, and I know that people oftentimes are really, really desperate for like a script, like tell me exactly what to say. And I totally understand the appeal of that, because it's like in a moment when I'm dysregulated, like can someone
just tell
me exactly what to do?
Yeah.
But oftentimes what happens there, right, is like it's either we can't access the specific words, and then we felt kind of reliant on that, so we feel like we're kind of fumbling because it's like trickier to access.
Like you wanted. Yeah.
And so I think we're going to talk about this. Like, obviously, with our examples here, it'll come off as like a script, right? But what I think is really important here is the goal of the conversation, mm-hmm. and like holding that in mind, and like mm-hmm. you, like really, actually, like you are an expert of like your own kid and like what they oftentimes need. You also were a kid once too, and so like you've got this like inner intuition of like what you might have needed in these moments, and like so that's pretty powerful stuff right there that you have access to once we're able to regulate, which is why that comes first. So I think, you know, for younger kids, you know, what's the goal? And I think oftentimes the goal for them actually isn't understanding the system mm-hmm. quite yet. Like, it's the goal is safety, you know? And so, you know, with my 5-year-old and just also knowing kind of like what I felt like would work for her, and also, you know, that felt aligned with, my partner and I's sort of, shared agreed values on this, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that in a bit, about when that there's not exactly the same views between parents. But you know, I think for her, you know, it was sharing, you know, some families are being treated unfairly by grown-ups, and I saw some of that on my phone, and then I snapped, and that wasn't about you, you know. I'm sorry. It's not okay. It's not okay that some families are being treated unfairly. It's not okay that I snapped at you. And I'm going to take a minute. You are safe. We are safe. And then I'm letting her know, like, if you have questions, you can always ask, you know?
Yeah.
And she was more concerned with like, you know, what I had, that I had just snapped at her, you know, and like,
right. Like, am I in trouble, mommy?
Yeah. And then I'm also just like watching for like certain behaviors with her, like, you know, looping questions or clinginess or some sleep changes. I know that, like, you know, she spends time with grandparents, and sometimes grandparents have news on. And so it's also just like kind of looking at the environment of how we're keeping her safe too. So like communicating boundaries around that with like extended family too. I'm curious, do you have anything there to add with the little ones,
the
since you've got
ones.
One yourself?
Yeah. I think that one of the things you talked about is like, when we talked about it separately, is like, we're not talking to them about ISIS murdering people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and that is not because we're trying to withhold truth. It's because it's actually like not something that they can take in that way right now.
Yeah.
And that will change as they get older.
Exactly.
But we can say some families are being treated badly and people are getting hurt. And I think it's worth acknowledging that this is a different conversation if you are part of a vulnerable group.
Yeah.
And I wish I could, I'm going to talk to you about what I'm saying to my older son, who is brown, and we are brown people. But with my 5-year-old, I am actually still sort of saying what you're describing. Sometimes I'm giving examples, like people that look like your grandparents, and I sometimes name other people we know of, like, and it's really important that we know that this is wrong and we stick up for the people we love. And that we believe that, like, this is not how it should be. So we do say things like that. We want to be helpers. And sometimes we talk about how we're being helpers. And our goal, to go back to this idea of goal, which I think is a really grounding principle in how you talk to kids, is your goal for them, no one's goal is for their kids to be scared and worried, right? The goal is, I want my kids to understand that they are safe with me. And that's still true, right? Like, that I'm doing everything I can to keep them safe. And I am saying that I'm doing everything I can. We will do everything we can to keep you safe.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. And so I know you've got a kiddo that's a little bit older here. And so these conversations might look a little different as they get older. I have an 11-year-old, a little bit older there. So more of these middle-aged kids. And I think here what we're looking at is a little bit more of honest naming along with reassurance. So, you know, we may be naming things a little bit like more clearly while still working to protect them from carrying adult responsibility. I think at this age, kids are going to hear things whether we want them to or not. And so saying something, you know, along the lines of like, you might hear people talking about ICE. I'm curious, and checking in, right? Like, what have you heard? What do you know? Like, and you know, some things that we said in our home that aligned for us was, the government is using power in ways that are hurting families, and I believe that that's wrong. And this is a problem that grown-ups are responsible for fixing, and you don't have to carry this. And I also add, like, knowing my kid, and he's someone who's really like, thinks about his future a lot, like what he wants to do when he grows up. And like, he's always asking questions about stuff like that. He like worries about our environment and like, is the sun going to explode? You know, things like that.
The usual.
And so one thing I will say to him is like, you know, and what's really cool is that one day your generation is going to be the grown-ups, and like, how cool that like you, like one time, like there's going to come a point in time when like you and like your generation get to be the people who are creating change and like making decisions, and I'm going to do my best to make sure that we set that up for you all. But like, you also, like, you will have agency, and right now your job is to be a kid. Your job right now is to be a kid. If you have any questions, I'm here, right?
Yeah.
Like, as they come up, always.
Right. No, I think that this idea of like preparing them, naming things, but not asking them to carry adult responsibility is really important.
Yeah.
And the reassurance comes from telling them, we as adults, we are doing what we can do.
Yeah.
You know, and I also, my son is just a little bit younger than yours, but it's similar conversations. But there's another layer of it, because he is brown and he knows that. He knows that people sometimes don't know what he is. We talk openly about race and difference in our household. And we, you know, there's a very different conversation happening for families like mine and families that are significantly more vulnerable than mine around, like, yeah. What do you say if you actually encounter ICE? And I think some of that is like beyond the scope of what you and I can go into fully today. But I have said, you know, some of the things you've described, like, what have you heard about ICE? And like, we don't approve of this. This is wrong. These guys are breaking the law. They are doing things that are against the Constitution. We say those things because he's learned what those things are in school. Mm-hmm. We also say things like, if someone should ever walk up to you, you should say, I was born in New York City. I want to speak to my parents. I need my parents. I need an adult. Mm-hmm. And you should, we sort of let, like, try to teach him, like, who are the safe adults? Mm-hmm. Do you have our phone number memorized? Do we put a copy of our phone number written down in his backpack? We are not putting copies of his passport in his backpack right now. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if we will do that. And mm-hmm. I really, you know, Mike, if we go back to the idea of goal, it's some degree of preparedness is part of my goal. I don't want my son to think we are living in a world where this could never, ever happen to us, because that's actually false. But I do want him to believe we're living in a reality where we have plans and we have ways to protect ourselves and each other.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. And there's the safety and containment and reassurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I guess as we kind of think about the older kids who, you know, gosh, if they have phones, if they have access to the internet, like,
they're seeing things.
Like, they, you know, and so after we've done some of this work for ourselves, I think a lot of it with these kids is showing them more, is actually having open dialogue with them about, you know, with my 14-year-old, knowing her, it really helps when I share with her, hey, here's like some kind of like a shared experience that I've had with these sort of things. Here's some of the things that I have felt. It would make a lot of sense if you feel some of these things too, angry, scared, sad. I've caught myself doom scrolling. I've caught myself feeling like overwhelmed, panicky, like burnt out, you know, all these things. With her, I can name some of these things, and then it's also the, and here's what I'm doing, right? And here's how I can model some of these things. She has a therapist. She knows that, like, if there's some stuff that's happening and you want to check in with your therapist, like, that's an option. It doesn't have to just be me. We get to, like, enlist the other adults in your life to offer support here. But also, right, another way to protect is, like, I still can hold boundaries around screen time, access, you know.
And for her, 14-year-old doesn't need to be watching videos of murder.
Yep.
Like,
nope.
She's certainly hearing things and probably watching some stuff, but, like, we're allowed to say, like, no, we can't. This is not something you need to see.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, a listener may be like, well, my kid's already been exposed. They saw the video, right? And so I think it's, you know, responding with sort of simple, like, honest language. We don't need to go into more of the graphic details, but we can get clear about what is it that they saw. Clear sort of moral framing, what happened
was
wrong.
Right.
And I think it's also naming, you know, that there are adults who are organizing, protesting, showing up.
Yes.
I think that these kids need to know, have a reminder that the world isn't only harm, right? Like, and I think we need that too, you know? So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. And I think that, as we said in the beginning, like, there may be more questions, there may be more conversations.
Yeah.
To me, I think the overarching goal is that my kids will come to me and know that like I'm a person they can talk to about these things.
Yeah.
And that they know sort of like what our values are and where we stand as a family. Yeah. And you know, when I think about, to go back to this idea of like, how do we stay hopeful? The biggest asset we have right now is each other.
Yeah.
Community is incredibly powerful in times like this. I'm like so moved by how the people of Minnesota are showing up,
yeah,
for each other. The levels of organization and resistance that is both decentralized and highly organized at the same time. And so much of what they're doing is just like volunteers patrolling school routes, right, with whistles. So they just, yeah, like know if kids are walking to school. And I think we sort of alluded to this before, but I'll say it very clearly that the antidote to despair is action. Mm-hmm. And so as those of us who are outside of Minnesota are watching them and worrying and thinking about how the world is crumbling, like we can take action. There,
yeah,
are specific ways to help the people of Minnesota, but there are also small things you can do maybe in your own communities. It doesn't have to be large scale joining protests or being on the ground resistance.
Yeah.
You have to check in with yourself on what feels right.
Yeah.
But we've, yeah, talked about like calling Congress people, donating to mutual aid organizations.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll share.
Yeah, we'll
share some resources. This is going to go up on Substack, I think, so it'll be an easy place to like link some of these things. But like, I know that my family that lives in Minnesota, I just got a text this morning, a link to an organization that's looking for, like, you know, at first they really needed coats and just like warm, you know, cold weather gear. Now they're looking for like gas cards or like prepaid phones.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
For some of the commuting that they're doing, like, yeah. And so,
right,
yeah, there's like real tangible specific ways.
So
there's places that have been vetted. And so we'll, but, and you know, and never underestimating what you're doing in your own home, you know, by
agreed, right,
by doing this work, you know. I think I want to just, because I shared a question box yesterday on Instagram, and I got several folks asking about, you know, okay, in my home we have split views politically on this, different stances, different extended family members with different views, and I think this is such a big conversation that we can't do it fully justice here today, but you and I were talking, you know, before we started recording on like what can we name around this, because I think it's very real for a lot of people, right? And so first, just normalizing, I think, how hard that is, and disagreement inside families feels especially destabilizing, because kids,
right,
like what we're talking about here is like coherence and safety, and wanting adults to feel aligned around that, you know. And so I think what we can offer is that I think the goal here isn't actually perfect agreement, right? I think the goal is protection and containment for kids. And, you know, you and I were saying, you know, how kids don't need all the adults in their lives to share the same opinions. What they need is not to be pulled into adult conflict or asked to referee it, you know? So,
yeah,
sort of finding, if we can, like a, you know, what is shared ground? And maybe the shared ground is like, we don't want our kids to see things that we're not going to share graphic content. We're not going to debate in front of them. We'll always sort of come to them with reassurance, you know, when extended family is involved. Maybe it's around setting clear boundaries. You know, we're handling this in an age appropriate way. We're not going to discuss it in detail. Like with my parents, it's like, can you not turn on the news when,
right,
when my kids come over? And it's protecting their nervous system and at least seeing if we can get on the same page around that.
To what you were saying, which is like, when there are differences between partners, you know, where can you find overlap? I think we were talking about this idea of like, this is not a situation where you need to fully resolve your political differences in order to get aligned on how you want to talk to your kids.
Yeah.
But it feels important, you know, like it's a longer thing. How do you navigate that? But it does feel important to say and to name in reality that like ICE has murdered civilian citizens. Like that happened.
Yeah.
And the government is lying about that.
Yeah.
And that like, no matter what someone feels, It's a sign of intelligence and strength to be willing to change your mind when you encounter different and new information.
Yep. Regardless of what political party is in power and whether or not you've...
That's right.
Yeah.
Like, it's never too late to turn around because something hit you differently. Yeah. And I think, again, if we think about the power of this resistance movement in Minnesota, it's not that all of these people are politically all voting identically either.
Yeah.
They just actually know that, like, they're under siege and they have to help each other.
Yeah.
And they know that no one is safe if they don't help each other. Because we're witnessing white U.S. citizens get killed.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Sumi, where do we wrap this up?
How do we close this? Yeah.
I think we close it with a little bit of hope and a little bit of joy and a little bit of a reminder that being in conversation like this, taking these sort of things in, caring about this and how we're showing up for our kids, all that matters. What do you think?
It sure does. I agree. And we've said this a couple times today, but take some hope from the resistance in Minnesota. Yeah. Recognize how many good people are coming together to help each other. Take some reassurance from all of the voices together saying, this is wrong, you know what you saw and you know what you heard, and we all deserve a better version of reality than that. And lean into community. Mm-hmm. Find people, if you are, a lot of the comments I've gotten on some of my reels have been like, where I live, there are not a lot of people that share my views. Find one or two people. You do not need 200 people, but you do need some people that see what you see and feel what you feel.
Yeah.
And connect with them in real life as much as you can.
Yeah.
And take action. Any kind of positive action. Anything you can do.
Yep.
Should we do a little bit of just three deep breaths together to just...
Let's do that.
Let's do it, man.
I always make a little shushing sound on my exhale because it just does something for me.
Yeah, do it.
And you can or you don't need to, but
Yeah, I like to do 4-4-4 breathing. Mm. So inhale for 4, perfect. Hold for 4, exhale for 4, and create a rhythm.
Beautiful. I'm going to combine.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. So guys, feel free to join us. Let's really get close out in a space of groundedness. So inhale 1, 2, 3, 4, hold 1, 2, 3, 4, exhale 4, 3, 2, 1, again on your own. And then you can open your eyes and return to your space. Thank you, Cassidy, for your time, for your hustle over the weekend with all the craziness of me being like, I think we should do something. You're like, let's do it. Here's a Google Doc. Let's get started. Thank you. Thank you to all of you who came today. We're in this together.
Mm. Yeah. Community. Yeah. We're on a rock floating in space trying to make meaning of this existence. And it's pretty cool that during this existence, you've decided to show up here at this time and do something for yourself like this. So, all right. Thank you, Sumi. You're the best.
Thank you, my dear. So are you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me, for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.